ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
So I'll be reading some excerpts from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 87th chapter. And if anybody's read this recently or in the past, you'll know that this is the prayers of the personified Vedas, and that this could be a lifetime project, studying this chapter. It is philosophically one of the most interesting chapters that you will find in any book, what to speak of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'm just reading excerpts from places that I've earlier marked when going through this chapter for the sake of stimulating conversation. So please be prepared to be stimulated, and then we'll have more conversation based on what we hear. This is from 1087:20. Personified Vedas are speaking. The individual living entity, while inhabiting the material bodies he has created for himself by his karma, actually remains uncovered by either gross or subtle matter. This is so because, as the Vedas described, he is part and parcel of you, the possessor of all potencies. Having determined this to be the status of the living entity, learned sages become imbued with faith and worship your lotus feet, to which all Vedic sacrifices in this world are offered, and which are the source of liberation. Before I go into the purport, what did you hear so far? Just reflect back the couple of the points that you heard that profoundly changed your life in the last 30 seconds. Yes, we have several hands. Okay, 1, 2. Or whoever gets the mic first. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yes.
So basically what this says is that...
Just one point. Don't give a whole summary.
So we've inherited the state that we have today, which is the material body and our state of mind. And that's my understanding.
Okay, tell me what you mean by that. We've inherited...
So based on our past karmas,
yes,
we've... the way we look and the way we feel and our personalities are kind of... a reflection of our karmas, and so what is today is really an outcome of our karmas.
Yes, thank you very much. This is a very important and distinct point here, and that the material bodies he has created for himself, he here is using a pronoun to refer to the living entity, he has created for himself by his karma.
Right.
So one could be aware of this, that whatever situation I'm in now, I've created for myself. Yes, please, Rupa Mamaja. Please offer technical help.
Dandavat Pranam.
Thanks.
All Vedic sacrifices are offered to Krishna. I mean, it's actually addressed directly to him, to his lotus feet. Even though if we look at like the table of contents of the Vedas, that's not necessarily obvious. But actually, they all are going to him one way or the other.
Yeah, that's a good point. And who can say where Krishna says such a thing in the Bhagavad Gita? Yes, say it. And then we're coming over to Sri Antariksha after that. Go ahead.
It's 15:15. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannavishto mata smritir gana apauhanam cha vedesha sarve ahamerva vedyo. Vedanta krit veda vidaiva chaham.
Defend your choice, please.
So in the second line, Krishna says that Vedesh sarve ahameva vidyo. From all the Vedas, I am to be known. And then he says that I am the compiler of Vedanta Sutra.
Okay, what she said was all sacrifices were meant for him, right? Or to be offered to him? Okay, who has the verse, please, on the top of their brain? Where it should be resting right now. Huh? What's wrong with the last verse in the fifth chapter? What's wrong with Bhuktaram Jagatapasam? What's anybody got against Bhuktaram Jagatapasam? Doing so many other verses, that's the one, right? Bhuktaram Jagatapasam, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, Suridam Sarvabhutanam, Gyafamam, Shanta Briche, Keshri Antariksha. Make your point, but tell us what that verse means first, what we just said.
I was not paying attention.
Bhuktaram Jagatapasam. It was in relationship to the point that Krishna is the beneficiary of all sacrifices that are all meant to be offered to him.
So Bhuktaram Yajnatapasham, so I am the ultimate beneficiary of all the all yajnas and
sacrifices. Well, there it is. Okay, good. Go ahead.
So Maharaj, what struck me here is the word, so after the living entity has created a body based on his karma, he actually remains uncovered by other grosser subtle matter.
Now, isn't that profound? Another verse that's quoted frequently in Prabhupada's purports from the Vedas, it says something similar but in a very concise way. Four words only. Asango hyayam purushaha. Everyone say, asango hyayam purushaha. The living entity actually has no sangha with the material world. Good to know, right? This is a profound point made here that the living entity actually is uncovered either by gross or subtle matter. So this is an interesting conundrum that's somehow or other we've become connected to the material world, even though we have nothing really to do with it, ultimately. We make a sangha with it, very artificially. Any last point before we go to the purport? Something, a point you heard that you like to amplify? There's several here, 1, 2, 3.
This point about that we remain uncovered by either gross or subtle matter doesn't make sense because we actually feel covered.
It doesn't make sense because you feel covered? How about if you rephrase it and said, when you feel covered, it doesn't make sense?
Because we
that modification might help a little bit. When I feel covered, it doesn't make sense to me that I'm have nothing to do with the material nature. Is that okay? You don't mind me editing that?
Yeah, what I was saying was we are covered and we always misidentify ourselves with gross.
Yeah,
and
so this is an interesting point we're going to explore, obviously, but it has a little shock value to it. So there's a few more hands going up. We'll take two more and then we're going to go into the purport and you can dive even deeper.
I was just looking at the point where it says learned sages become imbued with faith and worship. So which just so they understand that the living entities are caught up in this bondage of karma, and to get liberation out of this, they seek to worship the lotus feet of the Lord.
Could you look up imbued? Are you all feeling imbued? Learned sages become imbued with faith and worship your lotus feet, to which all Vedic sacrifices in this world are offered, and which are the source of liberation.
It means inspire or permeate. The origin is late Middle English in the sense of saturate.
Saturate, okay.
From French, imbu.
Yes.
Means moistened.
Moistened. Soaked with faith.
And Latin also, imbutus, also means moistened.
What? Last part you said?
In Latin, imbutus also means moistened.
Moistened, okay. Purport. Actually, we're going to look at word for word because let's look at the word for word. Swa. By himself. Krita. Created. Pureshu. In the bodies. Amishu. These. Abahi. Not externally. Antara. Or internally. Sambaranam. Whose factual envelopment. Tava. Your. Purusham, living entity. Vedanti, the Vedas say. Akila, of all. Shakti, energies. Dhrita, of the possessor. Angsha, as the expansion. Kritam, manifested. Iti, in this manner. Nir, of the living entity. Gatim, the status. Vivichya, ascertaining. Kavaya, learned sages. Nigama, of the Vedas. Avapanam, the field in which all offerings are sown. Bhavataha, your upasate, they worship. Ankrim, the feet. Abhavam, which cause the cessation of material existence. Bhuvi, on the earth. Vishvasita, having developed faith. Purport. Not only does the Supreme Lord remain totally uncontaminated, I'm going to read from my book. Not only does the Supreme Lord remain totally uncontaminated when he resides within the material bodies of the conditioned souls, but even the infinitesimal jiva souls are never directly touched by the coverings of ignorance and lust they acquire while passing through repeated cycles of birth and death. Thus, the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.10.5 proclaims, sa yach chayam purushe yash chasav aditye sa ekaha. The soul of the embodied living being is one with him who stands within the sun. Similarly, the Chandogya Upanishad teaches, tattvamasi, you are non-different from the Supreme Truth. In this prayer, the personified Vedas refer to the finite enjoyer of material bodies, the jiva soul, as an expansion of the transcendental reservoir of all potencies, the Supreme Lord. The term Angsha Kritam, made as his portion, must be properly understood, however, in this context. The jiva is not created at any time, nor is he the same kind of expansion of the Lord as the omnipotent Vishnu Tattva expansions. The Supreme Lord is the proper object of all worship, and the subordinate jiva soul is meant to be his worshiper. The Supreme Lord enacts his pastimes by showing himself in innumerable aspects of his personality, whereas the jiva is forced to change bodies whenever his accumulated karmic reactions so dictate. According to the Sri Narada Pancharatra, yat tattastam tuchidrupam swasambhidyad vinirgatam ranjitam gunaragena sajiva iti katyate. The marginal potency who is spiritual by nature, who emanates from the self-cognizant samvit energy, and who becomes tainted by his attachment to the modes of material nature is called the jiva. Although the jiva soul is also an expansion of Lord Krishna, he is distinguished from Krishna's independent Vishnu expansions by his constitutional position on the margin between spirit and matter. As the Mahavaraha Purana explains, Shvamshash Chata Vibhinangsha Iti Dvidha Shaishyate Angshino Yatu Samartyam Yat Swarupam Yatastiti Tadeva Naunumatropi Bhidam Shvamsham Shino Kuchit Vibhinamsholpa Shakti Syat Kinchit Samartya Matra Yuk. The Supreme Lord is known in two ways, in terms of his plenary expansions and his separated expansions. Between the plenary expansions and their source of expansion, there is never an essential difference in terms of either their capabilities, forms, or situations. The separated expansions, on the other hand, possess only minute potency, being endowed only to a small extent with the Lord's powers. The conditioned soul in this world appears as if covered by matter, internally as well as externally. Externally, gross matter surrounds him in the forms of his body and environment, while internally, desire and aversion impinge upon his consciousness. They impinge upon his consciousness. Appreciating the impinge. word. But from the transcendental perspective of realized sages, both kinds of material coverings are insubstantial. Is this helping you back there? By logically eliminating all material identities, which are misconceptions based on the soul's gross and subtle coverings, a thoughtful person can determine that the soul is nothing material. Rather, he is a pure spark of divine spirit, a servant of the Supreme Godhead. Understanding this, one should worship the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. Such worship is the fully bloomed flower of the tree of Vedic rituals. One's realization of the splendor of the Lord's lotus feet, gradually nourished by the offering of Vedic sacrifices, automatically bears the fruits of liberation from material existence and irrevocable faith in the Lord's mercy. One can accomplish all this while still living in the material world. As Lord Krishna states in the Gopalatapani Upanishad, Mathura Mandale Yastu, Jambu Dvipestito Tava, Yor Chayet Patimam Prati, Sami Priyataru Bhuvi. One who worships me in my deity form while living in the district of Mathura, or indeed anywhere in Jambudvip, becomes most dear to me in this world. Srila Sridhar Swami prays, Twad Ankshasya Mahesh Mameshana Twan Maya Krita Bandhanam Twad Angri Sevam Adishya Parananda Nivartaya. My Lord, please free me, your partial expansion, from the bondage created by your Maya. Please do this, O abode of supreme bliss, by directing me to the service of your feet. Can I have a Gita, please? If you can't get a Gita at a Hare Krishna temple, you're in big trouble. In the 13th chapter, you're, I'm sure, familiar with Krishna's statement near the end, Mukarvin, where he says that the soul doesn't, a person fixed in the Brahman conception, just as air doesn't mix with any other substance, similarly, the soul doesn't mix with the body. Herein, Krishna says, that's 1332 in Bhagavad Gita. And we'll look at the Sanskrit first, if you don't mind. Anaditvanyugunatvat Paramatmayam avyaya Sharirastopi kaunteya Nakaroti nalipyate Anaditvat. Due to eternity, Nirgunatvat, due to being transcendental. Parama. You know, this is really good news, actually, discovering who you actually are. I mean, the very phraseology, due to being transcendental, you know it's going somewhere good, don't you? Because, I mean, the bad news really is that I develop, according to Carl Jung, he said that we develop a false self in this world. I mean, he was studying psychic movements of living entities, and there's a way in which we develop a false sense of ourselves. We create a whole persona based on false ego. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. It's a really disjointed situation, so much so it looks foolish. Krishna says, vimudatma, the person acting under the impression that I am something that I'm not, in other words, his false sense of self, his shadow self, as Carl Jung said, is missing out on what he actually is, which is something really substantial. And that's why this verse is kind of startling. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I'm not this material body, and I have nothing to do with the body. And the source of all difficulty for the living entity in the material world is singular. It means that Upayam dvitiya binibeshitasyad ishad apetasya viparya yosmriti. I misidentify myself as being the false self, the dvitiya. There's a second idea or a shadow, and I think this is me. But actually I'm not. And then I have become estranged from the Supreme Personality of Godhead by my wrong-headed position in the world. And this causes me, binibeshita, I become absorbed in matter. And so it's a very important news to become reoriented to my actual self. And this verse is helping us in this way. Nirgunatvat. Due to being transcendental. Parama. Beyond material nature. Atma. Spirit. Ayam. This. Avyaya. Inexhaustible. Sharirasta. Dwelling in the body. Api. Though. Kaunteya. O Sanukunti. Nakaroti. Never does anything. Nalipyate. Nor is he entangled. Translation. Those with the vision of eternity can see that the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, O Arjuna, the soul neither does anything nor is entangled. Despite the fact, purport, a living entity appears to be born because of the birth of the material body, but actually the living entity is eternal. He is not born, and in spite of his being situated in a material body, he is transcendental and eternal. Thus, he cannot be destroyed. By nature, he is full of bliss. He does not engage himself in any material activities. Therefore, the activities performed due to his contact with material bodies do not entangle him. Yes.
Maharaj, then who got entangled then? If the soul is what we are, but then who got entangled?
Well, the point being made here is one phrase that was used within the purport is our connection with matter is insubstantial. And so, really, although I'm misidentifying with the myself with something that I'm not. Nasato vidite bhavo and the bhavo vidite sita ubayor api drushton tas tvanayos tatvadarshibi. Existentially, there's this difference between material energy, which is said to be nasato vidite bhavo and the bhavo vidite sita. There's a way in which it's so insubstantial, so ephemeral, wispy, that practically compared to who we are, our connection to it is being described here as non-entangling. Although it's true, we're entangled, it's described in other places, because of our misidentification with matter. Jayato vishayam pumsam sangas teshu pajayate. Sangat sanjayate kama, kamat krodhat vijayate. So how does it happen? I am a conscious living being, and I look out into the things of the world, the material world, and because of my attachment to them, or because of contemplating them and thinking about enjoying them, or controlling them more, like because this is really the primary condition that connects me to the material world is my idea of controlling the material world, then I develop a sangha with them. Although, actually, this verse is saying you really don't have a sangha with it. For instance, I look at a particular tract of land and I say, that's my land. And, however, is it really? To what degree is... is America my land? I mean, they taught me that as a kid. This land is your land, this land is my land, from the something highway. They're teaching still. But land is land, and it's the same land. I mean, I remember the first time my parents took me to the border, and I forget where it was. There was a thing called Four Corners somewhere, the four states. Where is it? New Mexico? Yeah, you can actually get out of your car, and there's like four states intersect there. Like, these are four different states, and I'm going, that's stupid, you know, it's the same earth. You just put up a little monument there and said this is different. So there's all this designation is called upadi. It's described by Jiva Goswami, the Tapasandarbha. If you take a pure crystal and then you put a red rose next to it, then the crystal itself appears to be red. But it's not actually red. It just temporarily appears that way. So the living entity in contact with the material nature, due to looking out into matter and considering that I can control this, then he develops a sangha with it. And that becomes a temporary problem for the living entity. It requires a lot of explication because in various places it's described how we are entangled, but here it's saying we're really not. So it's sort of also in other places described as a dreamlike situation. When Maitreya is speaking to Vidura, he describes it like this. He says, when you're dreaming, sometimes, well, I don't know if you do, but you might see that somebody's apprehended you and they're cutting off your head. And you're watching in horror as somebody cuts your head off. But he points out, does Maitreya, you can't actually observe your head being cut off. Of course, I guess you could look in a mirror or something, but the point was you're objectively watching somebody cut off your head. But if your head's being cut off, then your optical nerve is probably severed as well. And, you know, there's a kind of false sense that this is happening to me, but when you wake up, you realize that I was falsely identifying with this idea that I was being tortured. So the same way, our connection with matter is so insubstantial that it's described to be not real, although we feel it is, because we do suffer because of misidentification, as much as a person in the dream is suffering until he wakes up. Is that helpful? Okay. Yes.
So Maharaj, in the purport, right after the first verse from the Narad Pancharatra, where it is defining the soul to be a marginal potency, and it says that it emanates from the self-cognizant samvit energy. So can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Because I'm coming from the jiva as a part and parcel of Krishna, so I was expecting sat, chit, anand, all the three to be there, and here it says it is coming from samvit. So like that.
Well, it's normally described as coming from the energy of the soul is a tatastha, and which means that he can be influenced by either side. And as far as the potency of samvit and the connection with, is the verse at the bottom here? Yeah, yet tatastam tuchidrupam swasam vedyad vinirgatam ranjitam guna ragena sajiva iti kachite. Is that the one? The marginal potency who is spiritual by nature, who emanates from the self-cognizant samvit energy, and who becomes tainted by his attachment to the modes of material nature is called the jiva. There's sandini, sambit, and hladini. Potencies here, it's described as sambit, but which means really cognizance, you know, because the living entity is a unit of cognizance. Did you have another point?
Yeah, I was just going to say that this
this verse, or rather the other one, the one from the Srimad Bhagavatam, but also this purport together. It's kind of like the Vedas are themselves saying the same thing that Mahaprabhu says into Sanatan Goswami in the beginning of Sanatan Siksha, since yesterday was Sanatan Goswami's disappearance day, and he uses the word tatashta shakti. He says jiva sharupoi Krishna nitya dash Krishna tatashta shakti veda ved prakash. And then it's interesting because the next line is, which is a line I don't usually remember, shriyamsha kirana jaiche agni jala chaya shva bhavika Krishna atina prakara shakti hai, which is like very reminiscent of this same verse, because it's saying that it is the living entity's constitutional position to be an eternal servant of Krishna, because he is the marginal energy of Krishna and a manifestation simultaneously one with and different from the Lord, like a molecular particle of sunshine or fire. Krishna has three varieties of energy. So it's like Mahaprabhu condensed all of this to one verse.
Yeah. And he quotes other verses in that section in Sanatana Siksha describing the nature of the living entity as being chitkana, or like a particle of that original fire. And this is very important because most people don't have this distinction or understand that there is a distinction of energies, that there's the internal potency, external potency, and the marginal potency. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Kshetra Gyakya Tatapara Avidya Karma Sangangya Dvitiya Shaktiri Tritiya Shaktiri Shite. This is another verse that Mahaprabhu invokes in that section, giving us an idea of the three categories of energy. One is the internal potency, the other is the external potency of Maya, and then there's the in-between potency, or the marginal jiva, who can be influenced by either side. Manjula Kanta.
Guru Maharaj, we are right in the middle. We have Krishna's energy, and then we can be attracted towards the spiritual, and we can be attracted towards the material. And I was thinking that Krishna is all-powerful, and material is supposed to be the least powerful. And yet we are more attracted to the material than we are to Krishna. How does that happen? If Krishna is right inside us, and he is the energy that gives us the
ability. Mahaprabhu answers that in the section of teaching to Sanatana Goswami. He says, Daiva hi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. And that is that the material energy, this divine energy of mine, he describes the external energy as also his energy. And although it's described by Krishna in the 7th chapter of the Gita, he says, Bhumirapu anilovayu kamano buddhi evacha ahankara ityam me bina prakriti rashtra. There's the separated or a lower energy, which is earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. And then he says, Apareyamitastonyam prakritim virimi param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam dre tejagat. Besides this inferior energy, there's a superior energy in mind, which are the living entities. But then he says they're struggling hard with material nature. So how can that happen if the living entity is superior to matter anyway? Same category as the Lord. And you have this. And the answer is Daivihi Esha Gunamayi. It's actually Krishna's divine energy. And because of the constitutional size of the living entity, which is, Mahaprabhu says to Sanatana, Kesha Gra Shatabhagasha Sharam Sha Shadrishatmakaha Jiva Sukswa Swarupa Yam Sankyatito Hi Chitkana. It's tiny, 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 like an atom size, and therefore can be controlled by the material energy. Now, just take a modern-day example. Let's just say that the superior energy manipulates the material energy. Let's just say you're Steve Jobs or Steve Wozniak, and you get this idea that I'm going to create a little computer-like thing, and then a few years later you decide to make the computer the size of a thing you can hold in your hand, like a smartphone, right? So then, you know, you get all this intelligence because you're a superior energy and you know how to manipulate the lower energies. I mean, that takes a lot of intelligence to make a smartphone, right? So you make it, and then next thing you know, you're addicted to it. I think even the founder of Apple said, you know, he monitors how much he watches screen time every day because, you know, it's dangerous. You can actually, it can take over your life. And next thing you know, that inferior energy that you manipulated is now manipulating you. Living entities do this all the time. They create things, and it's described in the Bhagavatam to be like creating a silkworm makes a cocoon and then gets inside it. He's so smart, he knows how to make a cocoon, but he forgot he's like building it around himself. Gets in there like, hey, wait a minute. So living entities do that too. They manipulate the heck out of this place, but then they get captured by it because it's daivahiyesha gunamayi. And there's no way out except for surrendering unto the Supreme Lord, because although we are the same category of energy, we're fully dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead to become unencumbered.
But how do we surrender when everything we do makes us feel like we are more and more competent until we get to a point where we become incompetent, right?
Well, you could just take a peek at reality and see that you're helpless, akinchana. You really have nothing no assets really, and no ways of being protected other than ultimately taking shelter of the Lord. That's reality, says Queen Kunti. And if you see that, then you're in a good position to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Would you like to hear another section, or do you want to keep drilling into this? Another section? I'm not clear on the votes because we don't have a constitution or an organized way of actually. Actually, I really like this verse. There was more sections in here. There's a verse from the Gopal Tapani Upanishad that says, Mathura Mandale Yastu Jambudvipe Stito Tava. So if you're in the Mathura Mandale, means if you're in Mathura Mandala, or Jambudvipe, if you're in Jambudvip, as Tito, that's where you're situated. Your chayet pratimam prati sami priyataro bhuvi. One who worships me in my deity form while living in the district of Mathura, or indeed anywhere in Jambudvip, becomes most dear to me in this world. Yeah, I see it put a smile on a lot of your faces because it's so nice that here's a solution to this whole conundrum of being entangled in the material world. And it's what the verse I quoted earlier suggests that one should do. Bhayam dvitiya abhinibesha tasyad ishad apetasya viparya yosmiti tamayato tam buddha abhaja tam bhaktyaika yesha guru devatatma. So the problem is I've identified myself with material nature, which I actually have nothing to do with. We established that part already. And now I've become abhinibeshita, I'm absorbed in matter. Now the solution is turn around the other direction and look at Krishna. Tanmayatam buddha abhijatam bhakyaika yesham. With one point of attention, worship Krishna. So you can get a deity of Krishna and you can worship him. And Kapiladeva says the devotees become very happy because the deity has a beautiful smile. And when you come in the temple room or in your home where you create a temple, and you're offering nice scents to the deity and everything, you're carried away by that. And he said, even neophytes, those who are just beginning the process of bhakti, if they come in and see the deity, smell the incense, the flowers, they hear the chanting, they watch others dancing for the deities, they become imperceptibly liberated just by being around the deity. Isn't that nice? Yes. And everyone here on Janmashtami, 10,000 people come here to this little place, and they come in just, I always admire how they come in and they go through, just even if they can see the Lord for a few seconds, they'll stop there and see. And they'll be imperceptibly liberated by the environment. Okay, I'm going to read another section. And it has to be marked, otherwise it didn't make a major impression. Okay, here it is. This is from 10:87:25. Supposed authorities who declare that matter is the origin of existence, that the permanent qualities of the soul can be destroyed, that the self is compounded of separate aspects of spirit and matter, or that material transactions constitute reality. All such authorities base their teaching on mistaken ideas that hide the truth. The dualistic conception that the living entity is produced from the three modes of material nature is simply a product of ignorance. Such a conception has no real basis in you, for you are transcendental to all illusion and always enjoy perfect, total awareness. I'm jumping ahead to the 7th paragraph, if you'll allow. And the paragraph starts with Srila Vyasadeva refutes this idea. There it is. Srila Vyasadeva refutes this idea in the section of the Vedanta Sutra 2.3.31-39 that begins Karta Shastrarta Vatvat. Prabhupada quotes that elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita. The jiva soul must be a performer of actions because the injunctions of scripture must have some purpose. That's the aphorism. Acharya Baladi Bidyabhushan in his Govinda Bhashya explains the jiva, not the modes of nature, is the doer. Why? Because the injunctions of scripture must have some purpose. Shastrata Vatvat. For example, such scriptural injunctions as Swarga Kamo Yajeta, one who desires to attain to heaven should perform ritual sacrifice, and Atmanam Eva Lokam Upasita Prihat Aranyaka Upanishad, one should worship with the aim of attaining the spiritual kingdom, are meaningful only if a conscious doer exists. If the modes of nature were the doer, these statements would serve no purpose. After all, scriptural injunctions engage the living entity in performing prescribed actions by convincing him that he can act to bring about certain enjoyable results. Such mentality cannot be aroused in the inert modes of nature. One of my favorite points. The point is that we are agents for change. And with our determination, after hearing in the Association of Devotees, bona fide Shastra, we can be self-determining in following the process of devotional service and thus become extricated step by step from the material world. And the proof of that, the logic that Srila Vyasadeva gives, is that the Shastra must have some purpose. That means if it's saying all these things, that soul rise, come out of material nature, it must be possible. Otherwise, who's it talking to? It doesn't make any sense that one would be permanently unqualified or unable to extricate oneself from the material world. So this is an encouraging point, at least it is to me, that if you follow the Shastra and you're determined about it, then the result is sure and certain. So you should be determined and patient in the process. Another point here is sort of an auxiliary point, but is that although the Shastra makes various enticements for living entities to attain things like heaven, which in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna disparages quite strongly, because he says, Shine punya matya lokam vishante evam tridamam anu prapana gatagatam kama kabalabante. You would try all these kind of fruitive activities to attain a higher position in the material world, and you're going to use up the pious credits and fall back down anyway. So he says, that's foolish. don't try for that. It's insubstantial. Nonetheless, the Shastra advises people to do that. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that this is one of the ways in which those who are entangled in the material world get drawn away from their material attachments, is by being induced to try to elevate themselves through the process of karmakanda. And then they develop a little faith because they see it actually works. I think in the Upanishamrita, karmi bhya parito hari pritya vyaktim yayur jnanina, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, that the karmis are actually, the actual karmis, they're working according to the injunctions of the karmakanda. Because they're following scripture, they're a little glorified. They're better than the vikarmis, that's for sure. And when they get some faith, then step by step, and hopefully when they're performing some Vedic sacrifice, somehow or other, they'll come in contact with a devotee. And by that association, then they'll develop faith in the Vaishnava scriptures, and they'll be able to advance in devotional service. So I've just made a few points. One of them is from the paragraph in the book, and then I made a couple of auxiliary points. And would you like to discuss them a little more? Shraddha Wood and Sri Antariksha's got a hot hand over there today. So we'll go to him next.
So Maharaj, when we say that the soul does the action, and we contrast that with the five factors of action, are we saying the soul's action is to desire? Because there's that other verse also which says, Ahankara Vimaratma Karta Hamiti Manit. So how do we understand that?
So the analogy that is given in the Govinda Bhashya, which is a commentary in the Vedanta Sutra, Baladev Bijibhushan says it's like a stick. And if the stick, the living entity is the stick is like the ultimate impetus comes from the living entity.
So Maharaj, I had the same question in 327 where Krishna says, Ankara Vimuratma Karta Hamiti Manyate, the living entity is not the doer, whereas here exactly the opposite it has been stated.
Yeah, why don't you grab the Vedanta Sutra? Huh? Vedanta Sutra? It's at the bottom shelf. You don't have the Vedanta Sutra? Are you sure? I'd be surprised if we don't have it. We should have it. At least we used to. There's been a Vedanta Sutra theft here. When a person's conditioned by the modes of material nature, we can find out what happened to that. It would be nice, and if not, just order another one, please. And please, if there are any pundits stealing Vedanta Sutras, please put them back. Okay, 327, I'm going to read you the purport. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nescience. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature, under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna in Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Rishikesh, or the master of the senses of the material body. For due to his long misuse of the senses and sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his relationship with Krishna. So there's a degree to which the living entity is the agent, but he has to be supported by Krishna. And it's like a father and a son. So let's say that the little child is walking around the house and he sees like a barbell. You know what a barbell is? It's like, you know, there's round weights on the end, pick them up. Somebody was complaining, said, all you ever do is lift weights all day long. And the guy said, no, actually, I put them down sometimes too. So these barbells, people pick them up so they can get stronger. So the father sees the son come over and try to pick up the barbell. It's not possible for him, but the father standing behind him picks up the barbell, and the son is, you know, moving his hands. It's his will to pick it up, but he doesn't have the wherewithal to do that. So the father's picking it up, and the son is lifting the barbell. So there is the factor of the will of the living entity, but the help comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as in the first canto, second chapter of the Bhagavatam, asau gunamayar bhavir bhuta sukshmendriyatma bi sanirmiteshu nirvishto bhute bhuteshu tad gunan. The super soul enters into the bodies of all the living entities, even after the beginning, at the creation, when Mahavishnu manifests all the living entities and places them back into the material nature. The Paramatma, it comes back into the heart of the living entities and reminds them of what their material desires were, and then facilitates them through the material nature to help them. Ripa Manjari.
So is the difference between the part where he says you're not doing anything and the part where we say you are doing something? Because, I mean, like you described the process of Shukriti, which literally means good doing good things. Is the key there the willingness, like willing thinking and feeling? We have that minute ability to do that, that's what we can actually do, is just the willingness?
Well, it's willingness in a full consciousness of who one is, because past this verse, we find tatvavittu mahabahu guna karma vibhagayo guna guneshu vartanta iti matva nasajyate. Shall we look at that verse? Because that's kind of a counterpart to this verse, and where is it? It is, where is it? It is Tatvavit to Mahabhu. Yeah, there it is. It's 28. Lo and behold. So they go together. Here this verse says, one who is in knowledge of the absolute truth, O mighty arm, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work and devotion and work for fruit of results. So when one comes to knowledge, then he's working with full awareness that actually he's not the body, and he begins to work under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Here's the purport. The knower of the absolute truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. And someone sent me a bumper sticker, a whole bunch of them. I put one on my car, because I said something in a class, I said, ignorance is awkward. So then I got a whole stack of bumper stickers that says, ignorance is awkward. So if you want one, you can have it. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and that his position should not be in the material creation. He knows his real identity as part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge, and he realizes that somehow or other he is entrapped in the material conception of life. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. He therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the Lord, consequently is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions. That's important. which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, one who knows the Absolute Truth in three different features, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of God, it is called Tattvavit. For he knows also his own factual position in relationship with the Supreme. Was that helpful as a counterbalance to the last verse? Okay, Rupa Manjari?
Yes, it was helpful.
Okay, yeah. That's all right. Sundarananda Prabhu, and yes, okay, go ahead. Whoever had the mic there, Prabhu, go ahead.
So, one verse that's connected to this whole discussion is 5:15, the Bhagavad Gita verse 5:15, which where, I mean, paraphrasing, Lord Krishna says that he doesn't take responsibility for the living entity's actions and their reactions. And Prabhupada in the purport, he explains about how the living entity is in a bewildering condition because of his own choices that he makes.
Yeah, which brings us back to the first verse we read tonight. Thank you. That's a very important verse to enter into evidence if we'll look at the Sanskrit. Most people know this chapter, but Narate kashchit papam nachaiva sukritam vibhu agnena navritam jnanam tena huhyanti jantava. And the translation is, nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. Purport. The Sanskrit word vibhu means the Supreme Lord who is full of unlimited knowledge, riches, strength, fame, beauty, and renunciation. What does the word vibhu mean? Yes. He is always satisfied in himself, undisturbed by sinful or pious activities. He does not create a particular situation for any living entity, but the living entity, bewildered by ignorance, desires to be put into certain conditions of life, and thereby his chain of action and reaction begins. A living entity is, by superior nature, full of knowledge. Nevertheless, he is prone to be influenced by ignorance due to his limited power. The Lord is omnipotent, but the living entity is not. The Lord is vibhu, or omniscient, but the living entity is anu, or atomic. Because he is a living soul, he has the capacity to desire by his free will. Such desire is fulfilled only by the omnipotent Lord. And so when the living entity is bewildered in his desires, the Lord allows him to fulfill those desires. But the Lord is never responsible for the actions and reactions of the particular situation which may be desired. Being in a bewildered condition, therefore, the embodied soul identifies himself with the circumstantial material body and becomes subjected to the temporary misery and happiness of life. The Lord is the constant companion of the living entity as Paramatma, or the Supersoul, and therefore he can understand the desires of the individual soul, as one can smell the flavor of a flower by being near it. Desire is a subtle form of conditioning for the living entity. The Lord fulfills his desire as he deserves. Man proposes and God disposes. The individual is not, therefore, omnipotent in fulfilling his desires. The Lord, however, can fulfill all desires, and the Lord, being neutral to everyone, does not interfere with the desires of the minute, independent living entities. However, when one desires Krishna, the Lord takes special care and encourages one to desire in such a way that one can attain him and be eternally happy. The Vedic hymns therefore declare, Esha u hyeva sadhu karma karayate tam yam ebyo lokebhya uninishate esha u eva sadhu karma karyati yam adho ninishate. The Lord engages the living entity in pious activities so that he may be elevated. The Lord engages in impious activities so that he may go to hell. That's from the Koshitaki Upanishad, which sounds a little Japanese to me. Agno Jantur Amisho Yam Atmana Sukha Dukayo Ishvara Previto Gachchet Swargam Vashvabhram Evacha. The living entity is completely dependent in his distress and happiness. By the will of the Supreme Lord, he can go to heaven or hell as a cloud is driven by the air. Therefore, the embodied soul, by his immemorial desire to avoid Krishna consciousness, causes his own bewilderment. Consequently, although he is constitutionally eternally blissful and cognizant, due to the littleness of his existence, he forgets his constitutional position of service to the Lord and is thus entrapped by nescience. And under the spell of ignorance, the living entity claims that the Lord is responsible for his conditional existence. In the Vedanta Sutra 2.134, the Vedanta Sutras also confirm this. Vishamya nagrinye na supekshatvatata hi doshayati. The Lord neither hates nor likes anyone, though he appears to. Thank you for entering that into evidence. We'll take a couple more, and then we better chant Hare Krishna. Yes. Sukeshri. Oh, so Prabhu, you had the mic. You've been waiting. Go ahead, and then we'll go one, two, three.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
In the previous verse, and in the purport, it was said like material activities, reactions of the material activities, and is mercy of Lord. That particular
yes.
section. So I would like to understand.
You'd like to understand that?
I would like to understand. Actually, I had this question for a long time because of my. I'm just new here.
How are adverse material activity reactions good for us? Or?
No, Prabhuji. Basically, sorry for that. I would like
Can
to understand.
Can you hold the mic below your lower lip? There,
yeah,
perfect.
So I would like to understand how to differentiate between, you know, is this a reaction of my imperfect senses because of which I am having this result, or is this a mercy of a Lord what has come to me?
Well, you can, it depends on your frame of reference. But the Bhagavatam says that if you develop a frame of reference that of the whole material world as being a place for your refinement, then and that the Lord's will is behind it, those two elements are important, then whatever happens to you adversely, and of course it comes from our own activities, that we've already established. And the quintessential verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8 says, Tate nukampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam hrutvagvapurvir vidritam namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadaya bhak. And this translation says, my dear Lord, anyone, Brahma is saying, who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Purport Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the personality of Godhead. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of God. The word susamikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord, and therefore the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, am I reading too fast? He may maintain a slight inclination, possible, to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord, therefore, creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. Does that help in any way? I'm asking Prabhu.
Yeah, Prabhuji, basically, I understood it. At the same time, I was not talking about the past karmas, but the present karmas that we are doing.
Well, just, the present karmas that you're doing.
Yeah, and their reactions. And what are they, sometimes like the reactions of, so that, you know, I should understand that whether this particular is, it was because of my imperfect senses, was this was done, or this was because of my, you know, or and I'm to say, how to take it as a mercy of Lord in that case, basically.
No, no, see,
because
that,
of
no, the way the logic of this works, tatayanukampam susamikshamanu bunjana evatma kritam vibhakam. He's saying, it does, is Lord Brahma, that we should take it, whatever reactions are coming to me, I'm causing, whether present, past, or in the future. This is my activity that's doing it. And that's the consideration. We're not saying that it's coming from the Lord, but he arranges the material world in such a way that I can become sensitized. And really, if you consider it, whatever frustration comes from the karmic reactions that we have is oftentimes brings us to take more shelter of the Supreme Personality of God, and that's the inclination that we should develop. It is in because of our ignorance and moving in the material world without proper knowledge or instruction that has caused my reactions and reactions in the material world. There was one more? Two more. One, two.
So Prabhu, I was just thinking, just in short for me to understand, when a living entity is exposed to listening to Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, makes the right choices because the intelligence is completely purified, listening to Shastras or, you know, observing other advanced devotees, they will start using their will in the right way. So in that sense, when they use their will in the right way, Krishna also helps them to control their mind, and also that they are not affected by the three modes of material nature and they can attain to the highest level. The other part that we were just reading before. So when you mentioned the before shloka, which said that the three modes of material nature acts upon the person, that is because of their own will again, right? So it's not to do with Krishna. It's to do with every living entity is what his desire is. So the desire is what is the culprit out of the whole thing. Right.
Yeah, we're dependent on Krishna for everything. When we surrender to Krishna and take to devotional service, there may be some what appear to be reactions that are coming, but those are personally directed by Krishna to remove the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit of the devotee. It's what we just read, and this is indicated also by Narada in the fifth chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, where he says, Navai jano jata katan shandavrajin mukunda sevan yavaranga samshmitin smaran mukundang rupa guhanam punar vihata michin narasa grahojana. And that is, if a person takes to devotional service, a person who surrendered to Krishna, then falls back down again, then that person doesn't undergo material existence like ordinary people do. Because having once taken shelter of the Lord, he remembers again and again the nectar of devotional service, even though he's unable to do it. And also Prabhupada said, it's like a person who becomes, who's the son of a rich man, and somehow or other becomes estranged from the family, it may seem like a bad situation, but it's not actually that bad because he can really go home at any time. His very wealthy parents have all kinds of means to bring him back, whereas an orphan who really has no connection anywhere has no recourse except to suffer.
So Prabhu, the question that I was thinking about is the three modes of material nature act upon somebody, or even the mind is acts upon somebody only when they are not desiring the right thing. If they are desiring the right thing, that I just want to surrender to Krishna, and you know, and my will is to just to serve Krishna, then automatically the person at some point will be able to control the mind and also the not be affected by the three modes, right?
Right. But I'm just saying that Krishna takes a personal interest in the devotee. And when the devotee, somebody surrenders to Krishna, Lord Ramachandra said in the context of Bibhishana surrendering, he said, when somebody surrenders to me even one time, I become that person's protector from then on. I take it from there. So it's a different relationship with the modes of material nature.
Thank you.
Okay, last one. Gandharvika Radha Devi Dasi for the close.
I think you answered Prabhu by reading this purport. Yeah, thank you.
Anyway, this all comes under the category of Sambandha Gyan. It's important to remember the teachings of the personified Vedas and also of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, what our relationship here is with the material nature.
No, I was just thinking that how Krishna is, it is said that, remember last time we read that 10,000, even 10 million times we cannot say, we cannot thank the Lord for the service opportunity.
Yes.
And I was just thinking, how come, like, he's like a mother, but he's neutral. A mother doesn't wait for the child to cry.
Actually, you know, as we talked about in other classes, Krishna says in the 29th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 29th verse of the 9th chapter, he says, Samaham Sarvabhuteshu Nami Dveshastina Priya Ye Bhajanti Tumam Bhaktya Mai Te Teshu Chapyaham. Krishna's not getting involved is actually his ultimate mercy, because really he wants the living entity to make his own choice to surrender. As we all have experienced for ourselves, the real impetus in Krishna consciousness has to come from us. If I decide myself that I'm going to surrender no matter what, it's an internal choice, and I made that decision. No matter what my external circumstance is at the time, it becomes practically inconsequential because I've made that determination. So the verse says, Samaham Sarvabhuteshu Nabi Dveshastinapriya. Basically, Krishna's saying that I don't interfere with that part of your independence because you have to make the choice yourself. Of course, devotees get involved because they understand the purpose of the Lord's creation. So they go around like knocking on people's doors, chasing after them on the street and say, hey, by the way. But then Krishna says, Ye bhajanti tamam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. The second half of the verse, according to our acharyas, indicates that when Krishna does get involved, it's a whole different thing, because he starts to reciprocate in unusual ways, like not inordinate ways. He's giving more than you could possibly imagine as Bhagavan. The first part's about Paramatma, who's really an order supplier in the material world. He's sort of, the whole material world's not very interesting because everyone's just self-centered, and Krishna's sort of supplying for them as the Paramatma, arranging through material nature. But when somebody surrenders, that's when it starts getting interesting. For the living entity and for Krishna too. He's like, what? Okay, we're on. And then he takes a personal interest and starts reciprocating in ways that are unimaginable. That's why Uddhava says that verse, the famous verse, Aho bhakiyam stana kala kutam jigham saya payat apyasadvi lebegatim datruchitam katonyam kamvadaya lun sharanam vrajima. Who would surrender to anybody else but Bhagavan, Krishna, from Raj? Because, you know, he saved Putana, and Putana came to kill him. But he just counted in the fact that she dressed like a mother, so it was like, okay, I'll take it. I mean, he's so merciful. So when Krishna gets involved, then everything starts, it goes to a completely different level. That's why we worship Krishna and nobody else. Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bo.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman. Hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.